kissed your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine, you have stood by me in my
life. From New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on the road. Nice to have you with us today. The latest on health and healing, new information that vitamin C can kill every virus known. Men, want to raise your testosterone levels? Want to show you how to do it the natural way. For all of you who suffer from diabetes, I'll show you how to cut your risk big time. And also the health benefits of the maca root, M-A-C-A, the maca. It's also called Peruvian ginseng. I'll give you the latest on that. And then, and always this is from peer-reviewed literature, a challenge to Dr. Offit and about not wanting to use vitamins, treat them like drugs, a natural health response. Now, my guest in the second part of our program today will be Carl Mayer. He is an attorney. He's a populist crusader. He's a maverick lawyer. He runs the Mayer Law Group in Prince, New Jersey. And we're going to talk about the prior National Security Agency and government domestic surveillance of American citizens. We're all acting, not we, but those people on Fox who seem to be clueless about history or truth or facts or balanced reporting, all of which are not in their purview, that if you hear them talk, the FBI is a really good organization, but sometimes just is a little behind the curve. Not true. That they haven't really looked and read your emails, and they haven't listened to your phone calls. Not true. How is it that so many people in the media and in Congress have missed this story? Well, we haven't. And that's why we are the number one progressive independent listen to radio program in the world. And we're going to tell you the facts and how corrupt these organizations and stupid the members of Congress and vile the media is. You'll get the truth on this today. And then there was a press release. What do you want to bet that none of the major media covered this? Came out of Washington, D.C. And here's what it says. Whistleblower group requests Attorney General Holder to open a criminal investigation of James Clapper for false statements to Congress. And it says, attorneys of the National Whistleblowers Legal Defense and Education Fund sent a letter to the U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder requesting that he open a formal investigation into criminal conduct by the director of the National Intelligence Agency, James Clapper, and others. The request is based in part on the allegations raised by the National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden, indicating that Clapper lied in testimony to Congress. The request cites Snowden's June 9th interview with the media where he raised credible and specific evidence documenting that the March 12, 2013 testimony given by General Clapper to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence was false. So we'll deal with that. And also, did anyone ever look further than the obvious facts? We will. We're going to show you who are these people who always end up as generals and heads of agencies, head of the CIA, head of national security. They all seem to be coming from one place, a place that Bill Clinton likes, George Bush, George Sr. likes. Booz Allen Hamilton. Do you know where that organization comes from? Do you know who owns that organization? Do you know how powerful they are? You will today. We have a lot to talk about. Let's begin. I believe that people should be taking vitamin C throughout the day, because it's not stored in the body. It's water-soluble, except for ascorbyl palmitate, which is a fat-soluble form of vitamin C. And therefore, as you are stressing the body, or exercising, or with a lot of heat and sweating, You're using up vitamin C, and of course, if you have an infection or an illness, then you're using a great deal of vitamin C, and are probably in a state that is called subclinical vitamin C. That's why vitamin C is so important. But there's new information out now that shows that vitamin C is good against all forms of viruses. Quote from Jonathan Landsman, if you suffer from fatigue, muscle weakness, joint aches and muscles, bleeding gums, or leg rashes, you could be vitamin C deficient. Everything from the common cold to cancer can't resist the healing power of vitamin C. In fact, there is not a known virus that can survive in the presence of the essential antioxidant. If you'd like to learn more about the benefits of vitamin C, the best way to consume vitamin C, then you should pay attention to Dr. Thomas Levy. Now, okay, then how are they suggesting this works? Well, how does vitamin C actually kill all the unwanted viruses and to prevent disease? Here's what Dr. Levy says, quote, vitamin C is referred to as an antioxidant that donates or gives up its electrons. On the one hand, a toxin, an infection, or anything that causes a medical symptom in the body is a result of oxidative stress or due to a lack of electrons. So, it's really quite simple. If our body lacks enough electrons, we'll get sick. This is the easiest way to understand why a healthy diet rich in fruits and vegetables loaded with vitamin C does help us to literally prevent disease. Eating enough vitamin C and antioxidant-rich foods makes it virtually impossible for our body to experience cellular inflammation. And furthermore, inflammation is an essential component to just about every chronic degenerative disease, including cancer. End quote. Now, here's what we should all understand. Vitamin C has been shown to help detoxify lead, to kill cancer cells, and a whole lot more. According to the work of the great Linus Pauling at the Linus Pauling Institute, vitamin C therapy has been shown to reverse serious health conditions like cancer. And they recommend that healthy individuals consume a lot of vitamin C every day. And research has shown that as little as 10 milligrams of vitamin C today can help prevent scurvy, but it's not scurvy we're concerned with. It's the big problems: cancer, diabetes, gout, high blood pressure, heart disease. And that's where vitamin C can come in. Vitamin C thins the blood big time. And therefore, the more vitamin C you have, the less likely you are to have a stroke. And so that's an essential. Quote, from Thomas Levy, MD, JD, he's an expert on vitamin C. And he is board-certified cardiologist. And he's saying that if people were taking vitamin C every day, they could be killing off a lot of viruses. I would agree with that. For the men in our audience who want to raise your testosterone level, because when it's down, well, you see what happens. Loss of interest in life, muscle mass goes, more susceptible to fatigue, the libido's gone. These are the things that come with loss of testosterone. In fact, our collective hormone balance is constantly being assaulted by things in our environment. When, for example, we're experiencing chemical overload, when we're exposed to carcinogens in our food, just the typical American diet is an assault upon our estrogen balance and hormone balance. And estrogenic compounds that we are exposed to frequently create additional negative factors in our body, including low testosterone. So how can you help yourself? Do something simple. How about adding organic raw pumpkin seeds to your diet? They are very rich in supplying you with nutrients, including the nutrients that are necessary for producing healthy testosterone. Zinc is very important. Why? Because The zinc content in pumpkin seeds helps prevent the body from converting too much testosterone into dihydrotestosterone, DHT, by aiding in the production of more testosterone. And though DHT is necessary at appropriate levels for good health, a lack of regular testosterone, which is often preempted by a lack of proper zinc intake, can lead to too much being produced. And that's how a lot of men go bald. And that's how you end up with an enlarged prostate. And that could even lead to prostate cancer later in life. So the pumpkin seeds are rich in the omega-3 fatty acids and tryptophan. And we know that the omega-3 fatty acids are precursors to prostaglandins, which are hormone-like substances that play a key role not only in sexual health, but also in sexual desire. And tryptophan is a precursor to serotonin, and that's a brain chemical that regulates mood and promotes feelings of calm and relaxation, both of which are necessary for maintaining a healthy sex drive. So that's how something as simple as daily consumption, a handful of organic pumpkin seeds or pumpkin seed oil, both are important, can help rebalance hormones and protect us. And by the way, it also helps protect against bladder infections and the formation of kidney stones. It helps protect against cardiovascular disease and liver disease. It helps detoxify the body and the blood. It helps relieve arthritis and can even be good against parasites in your gut. All that is based upon good science. Then, how do we help people with diabetes? Well, according to the latest study from George Washington University School of Medicine and Health, Public Health, they found that 3 short post-meal walks were as effective at reducing blood sugar over 24 hours as a 45-minute walk of the same easy to moderate pace. Moreover, post-meal walking was significantly more effective than a sustained walk at lower blood sugar, but up to 3 hours following the meal. So, here's the deal. When you've eaten your meal, go for a brisk 15-minute walk after each meal, and that can help reduce the risk of developing diabetes. Yesterday, I talked about jicama, a very tasty and delicious, and when it's cold, when you chill it, it has this wonderful, crunchy quality to it. You put it in salads. Today, it's maca. Now, some of you have not seen the maca root, but you've seen maca powder. And the maca is a root. It belongs to the radish family. It can help your immune system. And in different parts of the country, in South America, it's considered one of their miracle foods. It enhances immunity through a regulation process of the endocrine glands. It can also help the body to adjust and helps to effectively deal with biological and psychological and physiological stress. It's a good source of vitamin C. And because it's also called Peruvian ginseng and has many of the same qualities, it helps increase libido substantially in both men and women. And that's why it was originally found to be so important in Peru, because of helping both men and women regain their sense of passion, their libido. But when they checked men and they did a before and after on sperm count, it increased the male sperm count by over 200%. And in men who consume maca, they were able to eliminate erectile dysfunction. And women suffering from hormone irregularities or menopause have also found that maca to be extremely important in helping them regain their normal hormone balance. It decreased PMS pain and decreased menopausal symptoms. It encourages natural estrogen production, and it can help avert or maintain osteoporosis, or at least allow continuous calcium to be utilized by the body where it should be. It's a great stimulant to the adrenal function. It increases energy and stamina. It's a good source of iron and therefore helps, especially vegans, prevent anemia. So those are the reasons why a simple, inexpensive, but very nutritious maca powder or maca root should be used. Dr. Poe Offit is a very pro-vaccine person. And when I've seen him interviewed on television, I don't see it also mentioned the millions upon millions of dollars he's made from the pharmaceutical company for his patents and his research expenses being paid by Big Pharma. And the New York Times, according to the Alliance for Natural Health, published another shameful op-ed bashing nutritional supplements. This week, Dr. Poe Offit, chief of the Infectious Disease Division at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and doesn't believe in alternative medicine at all. In his article, Dr. Offit states, quote, nutrition experts argue that people need only the recommended daily allowance, the amount of vitamins found in a routine diet. Vitamin manufacturers argue that a regular diet doesn't contain enough vitamins and that more is better. This statement is offensive, not to mention potentially incorrect, on multiple levels. And then he goes on to talk about that we don't need all this. Well, to Dr. Offit and the New York Times, a few thoughts for you, but I'll be doing my own in-depth commentary in response to the New York Times in the next few days. Every single study shows that the average American does not get the nutrients they need from their food for many reasons. First, because they're not eating fruits and vegetables and whole grains, legumes, pulses. The soil in factory farms is depleted of nutrients. That in turn results in less nutritious vegetables, and there are over 33 separate studies showing that. And the enormous amount of pesticide residue on plants and are not safe. And yet there is no effort to try to put the GMO factory farm produce next to organic sustainable produce to show how much healthier for the body and for our rivers and our underground aquifers and the soil that organic is compared to factory farming. Also, we know that the average American is unhealthy because look at the obesity, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, inflammatory disease rates in the United States, the highest for any country in the world per population. And much of that is because of lack of exercise, and having the toxic, highly processed foods that results in multiple vitamin and nutrient deficiencies. And contrary to what Dr. Offit has to say, which is misinformation, for example, the USDA's report found that 93% of Americans have an inadequate intake of vitamin E, 56% have an inadequate intake of magnesium, 44% have an inadequate intake of vitamin let's say B6 and vitamin C and zinc, all inadequate. Now, exactly who are these nutritional experts that you're talking about that say that all we need is the recommended daily allowance, the RDAs? The American of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics adheres slavishly to the RDAs. Well, I happen to be a registered dietitian. I also happen to have an undergraduate and doctorate in human nutrition and public health science. The vast majority of nutritionists, physicians who use naturopathic and homeopathic procedures, all will show that through nutritional supplementation and a healthy diet, way above the RDA, they're able to reverse disease. Dr. Offit, did you know that the number one cause of death and injury in the United States was American medicine? You should know that. American medicine every year kills more Americans using standard practice, using their proper protocols, than heart disease or cancer or diabetes or stroke. And yet not a single article in the New York Times about this, or any hearing at any state or federal level. How could you kill 700,000 people a year? How could you injure over 20 million people a year? And that never be discussed? Oh, I forgot. Because you're the authorities. You're the experts, right? Well, why do you think more and more people don't want to go to your experts? And your experts are the ones who said that you can have all things just in moderation. I've got a question. It's just a general question, just common sense. Is a toxin any less toxic because it's in moderate amounts? What if I said, have some moderate amount of mercury in your tea, or lead in your milk, or cadmium in your ice cream? It won't be a large amount, but it'll be a moderate amount. Have some moderate amount of parasites in your hamburger. And you'd say, A, we're not getting parasites in our hamburger. If you're the average person, we're getting a lot of meat. You think you are? How do you come to that conclusion? See, those of us in the alternative position, we have a far greater barrier. Why? Because we are not officially recognized. As a result, when we make a presentation, write a book, do a documentary, an article, or a broadcast, our standard for proof must be far greater than the pundits or people who can, in a very cavalier way, just give their opinion. And because they're an expert, we're supposed to trust them. Everything said on this show is backed by hard science. Clearly, the hard science that your experts aren't familiar with. So keep in mind, Dr. Offit, you failed to distinguish between using nutritional supplements to maintain optimal health versus using supplements to prevent disease, like rickets, which is much lower threshold. So I will deal with this in depth on an upcoming program. Oh, for those of you who are still eating hamburgers and you're thinking you're getting a good protein meal, well, think again.
Besides hormones, what else is in a burger? Published in the Annals of Diagnostic Pathology, anatomic pathologists at the Cleveland Clinic recently dissected burgers to see what was inside. Fast food hamburgers, what are we really eating? We eat 5 billion burgers a year, and most consumers presume that the hamburgers they eat is comprised primarily of meat. But what did they actually find? They analyzed burgers from 8 different fast food joints and found them to contain the same tissues observed in hot dogs. That's probably not a good sign. They found blood vessels, nerves, cartilage, and swarms of these little parasites in burgers from a quarter of the fast food restaurants they sampled. No brains, though. That's good. But so how much was actually meat? What percentage of a fast food burger is actually muscle flesh, as opposed to these other tissues and parasites and fillers and everything? Meat content in the hamburgers ranged from 2% to 14.8%. 2% meat? They're practically vegetarian. Part of that other 85 to 98% that wasn't meat? Ammonia. Thanks to some excellent investigative reporting, we learned last year that a company developed a novel technique for killing all the fecal bacteria, injecting beef with ammonia. The meat industry loved it so much it became a multi-billion dollar industry and made its way into the majority of hamburgers sold nationwide. McDonald's, Burger King, and millions of pounds every year given to our kids at school. This is what the process looks like. It produces what one USDA microbiologist called pink slime, saying it doesn't even consider the stuff to be meat. And when the USDA says something isn't meat, not even good enough for prisoners in Georgia. They sent it back because the meatloaf stank like window cleaner. Why would they feed this to school children? School lunch officials said they ultimately agreed to use the treated meat because it shaved about 3 cents off the cost of making a pound of ground beef. 3 cents.
Okay, well, parasites and all types of blood vessels and corpuscles, but in 2% meat, what's the other 98%? Pink slime? Well, that's your hamburger. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment with our guest, Carl Mayer. Please stay with us.
It's not for me to say you love me. It's not for me to say you'll always care.
That for all the individuals living in New Jersey listening to this program, and that's a large segment, Monday they're voting on GMO in New Jersey. Now, we just passed yesterday a major, major bill in the House in Maine, overwhelming. I think there were only 4 nay votes. All the rest were yes, labeled GMO food. It's already passed and is up for signing in Connecticut. So we're going forward on all levels. We're going to have at least 4 states in the Northeast saying yes to GMO labeling. So I'd like everyone from New Jersey to call your state legislators today and say vote for yes, we want GMO foods labeled. Vote for the GMO food labeling. It's going to happen Monday, so please call today. Let's get the word out to everyone in the state, your representatives. My guest, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program today, is Carl Mayer. He is a populist crusader and a maverick lawyer. And for years, he has been opposed to the efforts by corporations to use the Bill of Rights to shield and protect wrongful behavior. The New York Times has called him a populist crusader and a maverick lawyer fighting for people's rights. He is a magna cum laude graduate of Princeton, received his JD from the University of Chicago, and his LLM degree from Harvard Law School. Carl represented Chris Hedges, Daniel Ellsberg, and other plaintiffs in their suit against Obama and his National Defense Authorization Act provision permitting indefinite detention of Americans, and for the act's vagueness in defining what constitutes support for hostilities towards the U.S. He was also working alongside the Electronic Frontier Foundation in its cases against government surveillance and spying on the Internet. Nice to have you with us today, Carl.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's an honor to be on. I'm glad to be on again. Thank you.
For over 7 years now, the Electronic Frontiers Foundation has been arguing in the courtroom that the National Security Agency has been conducting massive dragnet surveillance activities on American citizens, similar to those Obama has ordered the National Security Agency to conduct on overseas targets, part of his Presidential Policy Directive 20 issued last October. In fact, there are 2 cases that have been in the courts for a while now against the National Security Agency and Obama for AT&T's illegal and unconstitutional dragnet surveillance of millions of their customers' communication records. Now, here's the issue. I'm sure that you have been watching the Fox and the other networks, but mainly Fox take the lead because it was one of their reporters that was challenged, Rosen. And now they're suddenly outraged. It kind of, Bill O'Reilly reminds me of the Claude Rains guy in Casablanca when he goes in to Rick's casino and says, I'm shocked, shocked. There's gambling going on in this place, just as Humphrey Bogart is handing him his, you know, kickback. And
Right. And
so here we have Bill O'Reilly shocked that the National Security Agency is actually collecting data on people's phone use and can't believe that anyone has actually read any of our emails. In fact, last night he was actually challenging, have they actually read any emails? Do they collect any emails? And they're not listening to anyone's phone calls. And then we have President Obama says, oh, we're not listening to the phone calls. And I know both of those are lies. And they have been listening to phone calls. They have been collecting email data on American citizens, not terrorists, for a long time. Where have they been? Why have they refused? Why has every single person in the mainstream media, including the New York Times, refused to acknowledge how serious this is and how invasive they have been? And lastly, why hasn't anyone brought up the fact that all the Occupy movement protests in the United States, the FBI and other national security agencies and the Homeland Security and state agencies and local agencies that were militarized, were infiltrating the groups, spying on them, doing face recognition, even had snipers on buildings, were working in cooperation with Wall Street corporations together, sharing data. And they've been sharing data for a long time, including for decades. The CIA and other intelligence agency has been spying not on terrorists, but collecting proprietary data from manufacturers and sharing it with those who are in power in America, and in effect stealing trade secrets. This has in itself been a scandal for a long time. None of this has been brought forward. I'd like for you to take your time and share what you know and that you can prove and that you can document that will get us way ahead of where we're at now. And maybe, hopefully, people who are in the mainstream media who do listen to this program, because I happen to know producers and talent coordinators, a lot of them, and we're heard on our sister station PFW in Washington for 30 years, and we're one of the most popular radio programs in Washington, so you can bet that a lot of people are going to be listening to what you have to say. So the forum is yours. Show us the truth.
Right. Well, thank you, Gary. One of the positives of Mr. Snowden's whistleblowing and revelations is that some of the ancient wisdoms are being rediscovered. So, for example, George Orwell's book 1984 has rocketed up in sales. I think similarly, I've heard that the Gary Null program has with your focus on this, and has increased its listenership, and people are starting to listen to voices like yours who've been working on this issue for years, and I got to thank you. You were one of the first people that interviewed us about the Hedges versus Obama case regarding indefinite detention. And I want to say that these issues are related because you have, at the same time, the government surveilling the entire population. EFF calls it a dragnet. And it really is. It's a dragnet, ongoing, 24/7, 365 days a year, surveillance of the entire population anytime they use any electronic medium, be it phone calls, internet, Skype, what have you. And this has been going on for a long time. We actually, our law firm, and you can reach us at carlmayer.com. Our law firm brought one of the first cases back in 2006 against Verizon. It was the first case against Verizon, and we still represent the largest class of customers against Verizon for their warrantless surveillance of Americans. We brought it just about the same time that the EFF was filing their case against AT&T, and we've been involved in all those litigations with EFF. And I'll tell you, as part of our litigation, we developed a source within the phone companies who said that, you know, even prior to the Bush administration, much of this activity was going on, including to the point of the government creating a replica at the NSA of the Verizon call center, which is located up in Bedminster, New Jersey, and literally has, it goes on for a few football fields, and it literally has a mapping of all calls that are routed over the Verizon network anywhere in the United States. And we were told by a source in that case that the government was recreating that that monitoring system down somewhere in Maryland. So, but you know, you shouldn't believe a plaintiff's lawyer, a public interest lawyer, necessarily. There's a lot of important writing that's come out that hasn't received the attention it deserves on the massive surveillance of the population. There are two things in particular that I would recommend to your readers. The first is the history of the NSA. There's a history that was done by James Bamford called The Puzzle Palace, which I think is one of the best works of investigative writing ever done. And it shows how the original intent of the NSA was to spy on foreign countries and foreign individuals, and how gradually that project turned inwards and started to was engaged in spying on Americans here in this country. The second piece of writing that I highly recommend to your listeners, and you can Google it. It was done in the summer of 2010 in the Washington Post. It was an investigative piece by Dana Priest called "A Top Secret Government," and it's really stunning in its dissection of how a lot of this surveillance has been privatized to the point where there are something on the order of 2,500 companies engaged in surveillance with the various spying agencies in the United States. And these companies earn billions. And in fact, it was Snowden who was working for one of these companies, Booz Allen. And that hasn't been focused on enough because, you know, the purpose of government intelligence is to keep things secret. But you can't keep things secret when you start contracting all of this out to private contractors who are feeding it to public trusts, siphoning up billions of our tax dollars, and what they get for it is of dubious value. But that expose by Dana Priest in the Washington Post in 2010 showed, for example, there are almost a million people who are private contractors who receive top secret classification by the U.S. government. So they're developing facilities in Washington that are larger than the Pentagon for all of this monitoring of American citizens. They're over 30,000 square feet of space in Washington devoted just to the surveillance of the domestic population. So this whole apparatus that's been created has spiraled out of control, all in response, allegedly, to 9/11. But what it really has become is a boondoggle for private contractors, as the Washington Post series suggested. And it is a massive violation of our civil liberties. I have no doubt that if the courts are true to the law, they would find that this surveillance program that was just disclosed, the PRISM program, is a violation of our Fourth Amendment rights. It's probably a violation of the Patriot Act because it's not narrowly tailored enough. Just scooping up everyone's phone records is something that the East German police, the Stasi, could only dream of. And it is truly Orwellian. The other point I want to make is that there is a connection between the massive surveillance of American society and repression of dissent. And you alluded to it earlier when you talked about the surveillance of Occupy Wall Street protesters. Let me drive that point home in our litigation, which is a litigation in which we challenged what's called the National Defense Authorization Act, but it's the ability of the government to, or the military, to indefinitely detain anyone without right to trial by jury, without counsel, in military facilities like Guantanamo. And one of our plaintiffs in that case was actually the founder of Occupy London. Her name is Kai Wargala. She's a co-plaintiff along with Daniel Ellsberg and Chris Hedges. And there was a document that we submitted to the court, which was issued by the London police, which classified Occupy London as a terrorist organization. And they listed it right under Al-Qaeda. Now, once you start surveilling the entire population, and once you start giving the government powers to indefinitely detain people without right to trial or jury in military prisons, just on the suspicion that they are terrorist organizations, that's a recipe for not chilling speech on a regular basis, because you have to be very courageous to speak out in an atmosphere like this. And it's a recipe for despotism. And it really is something that should never occur in our democracy. So we were gratified that we won an injunction against this indefinite detention, this military detention, this lawless detention in federal court. And it's up on appeal now. Our case may go to the Supreme Court. But I'd certainly like to encourage any lawyers or journalists who want to help our cause to keep pressing this case. These fights take a long time. We've been at the fight against the NSA whistleblowing for now 7 years, from half a dozen years, and it's important to keep fighting, though. And that's my message to the young people who listen to your show, is don't give up the fight. You have to realize that that it is a very important one, even though it's difficult, because once the government can do what they're now doing, there is a very serious chilling effect on all of our civil liberties.
Carl, and let's go through some of these issues. First,
yes.
Why don't we explain to people that the FBI and Homeland Security now deems any form of environmental activism as a terrorist activity, that these people are being monitored, that's when they will go into your emails, they'll listen to your phone calls, they'll monitor your travel. And if you and any animal activist today, if you were to do the following, if you worked on a factory farm and you saw that the animals were being abused, and you took that information to the government would then arrest you. And depending upon the state, they're called ag-gag laws, and they were lobbied for on behalf of the factory farms so that no abuse of the animals, which historically would cause people to revolt against that particular farm and not buy their products or cause some form of sanctions. Now it is you who have exposed the problem who are now deemed the criminal and a terrorist. Think of all the college campuses in the United States that that had small but ineffective Occupy movements on, because 99%, listen carefully to this, 99% of American students were against the Occupy movement. They never participated, never supported. In fact, the 1% that represented or less of the Occupy effort were then targeted by Homeland Security on the college campuses. They were infiltrated. Since when, except for the 1960s and the anti-war movement, and an absolute loon of a mentally incompetent J. Edgar Hoover and his entire bureau, would we go to that extent? But we have forgotten about Operation COINTELPRO. We have forgotten about the FBI trying to get Martin Luther King after tapping his phones, finding out that he was having a illicit affair, and then trying to get him to commit suicide for the better good, or they were going to blackmail him by letting his wife know this and his followers know this. They've been doing all this for a long time. Nothing has stopped, not even because of the church hearings. I want you to address that, but first, you alluded to something. You said that the intelligence business is a big business and people are profiting. This is from Robert Scheer from Truthdig, quote, "So it's true, as filmmaker Michael Moore once warned us, the Carlyle Group is Big Brother. That's the $176 billion private equity firm that once employed former President George H. Bush, his Secretary of State James Baker III, and a host of political luminaries that would put any other list of American ruling elite to shame. Plenty of Democrats, too, including former President Bill Clinton's chief of staff, Mac McClarity, and Arthur Levitt, the man Clinton appointed to head the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, during the creation of the housing bust. It is also the firm that owns Booz Allen Hamilton, which, thanks to the revelations of one of its employees, whistleblower Edward Snowden, we now know collects and stores much of the government's immense PRISM database spying on the lives of this nation's citizenry. This is symptomatic snooping through the telephone and internet records of hundreds of millions of Americans conducted by Snowden and others in Booz Allen's employ, who had the highest access to our most private personal data while working at a for-profit company. Our data is their commerce, and ever since 9/11, observing us has become a mega-lucrative business. Booz Allen Hamilton, the New York Times reported Sunday, quote, has become one of the largest, most profitable corporations in the United States, almost exclusively by serving a single client, the U.S. government. The word serving might be pushing it here, since 98% of the firm's revenue, $5.8 billion last year, came from the taxpayers, who are the same folks being spied on. That's ironic, isn't it? I'll bet none of the American public, and I certainly know one at Fox, because you have to have an IQ above 70 before you actually can put things together intellectually, would understand that the American public paid Booz Allen through the U.S. government $5.8 billion to be spied on. Well, if that doesn't smack of the Stockholm Syndrome, Booz Allen knows all about those taxpayers. Since back in 1998, during the Clinton presidency, the firm has hired to modernize the IRS. Quote, we made some very dramatic changes in the way the IRS is organized, said Booz Allen's CEO. Of course, to those swinging through the revolving door between the government and its defense contractors, it must be difficult to draw a distinction between their changing roles. James Clapper, the chief intelligence official in the Obama administration, who is now investigating their security lapse, was himself, you guessed it, a top Booz Allen executive. And it should be a little surprise that John McConnell, currently vice chairman of Booz Allen's, was, gee whiz, chief intelligence officials in the George Bush administration. It's crony capitalism at its patriotic best. Quote, the national security apparatus has been more and more privatized and turned over to contractors, so says Daniel Bryan, executive director of Project on a Government Oversight. This is something the public is largely unaware of. How more than a million private contractors are cleared to handle highly sensitive matters, end quote. Now, Brian points out that the for-profit folks spying on us also get to grant high-level government security clearances. Those private sector employees are then entrusted to work in the most secretive sectors of the government's national security apparatus, including the National Security Agency. It's good work if you can get it. In January, the Department of Defense granted Booz Allen a 5-year, $5.6 billion deal assigning its private sector employees in key positions to advise Pentagon personnel on crafting military policy. Maybe they can find some new conventional wars to fight, just in case the one against terrorism loses profitability. It could happen now that the American public has been alerted to the fact that in the grand design of that war, it is the ordinary American citizen, even when shopping on the internet, who gets to play enemy. That reality is what seems to have turned Snowden, like the others before him, into a courageous whistleblower. He signed up for training with the Army Special Forces to go fight in Iraq because he bought the Bush administration's line that it was a war to help free people from oppression. That misplaced idealism collided with the observation that, quote, most of the people training us seem pumped up about killing Arabs, not helping anyone, Snowden told The Guardian. Still, he continued to serve the government, both with the CIA and then the National Security Agency, where he worked as Booz Allen contractor. There he witnessed a part of the sordid story that he chose to share with his fellow Americans. He explained to The Guardian, quote, the National Security Agency has built an infrastructure that allows it to intercept almost everything. If I wanted to see your emails, your wife's phone records, all I had to do is use intercepts. I can get your emails, passwords, phone records, credit cards. I don't want to live in a society that does this sort of things. I do not want to live in a world where everything I do and say is recorded. Now listen to what he just said. This is important for this audience. I don't want to live in a world where everything I do and say is recorded. The folks at Booz Allen and its parent company, Carlyle Group, love that world as a fabulous profit center. And it's truly inspiring that there are still folks like Snowden whom they can't buy, end quote. Now, a simple comment on this.
Well,
I'm going to have you give your comment, but I'm sure. Concerned that all of this is about private contractors who have inside the beltway of Washington contacts and lobbyists who are frequently, more often than not, former legislative aides or legislators themselves or people from the military-industrial complex, all working to enhance their own financial well-being. So once you start them, they become like an immortal cancer cell. All they do is metastasize and grow, and no one ever questions what they're doing. Every year they get more money, and then one day comes when they don't have anything more to do. There's no justification for their existence. But being a good corporate Democrat, you've never seen a bureaucracy so big, so vile, so corrupt, so pernicious, so utterly, stupefyingly wrong that you won't support it. And being a big corporate Republican, you've never seen a military-industrial complex, a war you couldn't embrace, a dictator you couldn't love, a despotic regime that you couldn't find some reason to cuddle to, like John McCain, one of the most dysfunctional human beings in history. This is what we now are faced with, and yet the American public are not aware that there's nothing more that anyone can do to protect us. And now we don't have food for 18 million children, housing for 50 million Americans. We don't have gainful employment for 23 million people. We don't have a society that is embracing its new college graduates, but instead they're embracing debt with compounding interest. So we have misprioritized the most important basic things of life, and yet we're not getting to the root of the real problem. Corruption, greed on the part of those who are smart enough to play the system. Your thoughts, please.
Well, your explanation that the terrorist surveillance state is done for to benefit corporate America and the lobbyists rather than to benefit the people must be true if you consider the larger picture and the historical antecedents. Because back in the 70s, it was at least clear that one branch of government, and actually two branches of government, the Congress and the Supreme Court, made it clear that the purpose of these intelligence agencies and intelligence gathering can only be focused on foreign enterprises and individuals. It cannot be done domestically. And that bright line was drawn by the Church Committee, and it was also a bright line that was drawn by the Supreme Court in a series of decisions. That has now been overturned. But what is stunning is that in the 70s, the enemy of the United States was the Soviet Union, which was thousands of times more powerful and better armed than Al-Qaeda or any of these terrorist organizations. The Soviet Union had 50,000 nuclear warheads trained upon the United States. And yet, the leaders of the country in the Congress and Supreme Court stood up and said, even though this is the ultimate threat to our nation, even though we are engaged in a Cold War with an enemy that has the capacity to wipe out our population in a matter of hours, it is vitally important to preserve our civil liberties, and therefore the intelligence gathering in the United States shall not be trained on United States citizens. It shall only be directed abroad. Now, fast forward to the early 20th century, and there's a ragtag army of terrorists. It's not even an army. It's a criminal gang of terrorist organizations that have been demobilized. Its leader has been killed. And yet, we have done what would have been unimaginable when we were facing the Soviet threat back in the 70s. We have We have completely turned the intelligence apparatus on our own people, violated civil liberties, violated the Constitution, and all for an enemy that doesn't have a fraction of the power of the Soviet Union. So the only explanation could be the one that you just gave, Gary, which is that this is driven by the corporations who are feeding it at the corporate trough. And once the population understands that, I hope they will realize that they need to mobilize. They need to mobilize and replace these politicians who will not speak out. There's maybe a handful of politicians in the Congress that will speak out on this issue. You know, there's Ron Wyden, there's Bernie Sanders, and that's about it. Nobody else.
Carl, you've made a very important closing point there. We have to stand and demand that they stop. They should dismantle the entire state. And by the way, Jill Stein on this program, Rocky Anderson on this program, Gary Johnson on this program, all said that they would completely deconstruct the military-industrial complex, close down overseas bases, stop spying on Americans, reestablish the rule of law, reestablish habeas corpus, reestablish the right of citizens to seek redress against the government, et cetera, et cetera. Altogether, they got about 4% of the vote. So I am not at this point confident that the vast majority of Americans are willing to go through the discomfort of having their fundamental perceptions changed, altered. I believe that they are right now at the U.S. Open watching the Republicans on one side, the Democrats on the other, lobbying charges against each other. It's abortion. No, it's gay marriage. No, it is illegal immigrants. And no, it's the national deficit cut entitlements. No, it's, and all we're seeing is this, the true and important stories we're not dealing with. The American public, I believe, is in the last stages of bread and circus distractions. And I'm going to do a commentary on that in my next show. And so until we have more Americans, let's say 20%, willing to vote into office, true reformers who will change the power structure, then the power structure will maintain its grip and the people will continue with wanting to know about the latest salacious details of some celebrity's life. I wish it were otherwise, but I simply have to look at what we're dealing with. I'm a vegan, but I can't for a second, pronounce that we're making any progress when 98% of Americans choose to eat meat daily and without concern for the quality of the meat they're eating. They just want meat and lots of it. The bigger, the better. So on the one hand, we can say, look at all the books, articles, look at all the commentaries, look at the documentaries, look at all the health reports on what changing your diet means to us. And that is all true. And then look at 98% of the people who are gorging themselves in this Hemingway movable feast where we have the highest diabetes, obesity, and a level in children and in adults in the developed world poor population. So what we say and what we do are not always in alignment, but I'm glad to know, Carl, that you, Pearl Mayer, and your group are out there. You have the courage because you got to know that you're number one in the government's crosshairs right now. Because you represent a challenge to them in the legal aspects of the trial, not just Chris Hedges. Chris can only get on a few forums, as bright and courageous as he is, and Daniel Ellsberg even on fewer forums. But you're the guy that can cause things to be changed, and that scares them. So from the Mayer Law Group in Princeton, New Jersey, for all the good work you do, we are supporting you, and the website is Carl Mayer, MAYER.com. Thank you very much, Carl, for being with us today.
Thank you, Gary. Really appreciate it. As Marshall McLuhan said, the future is here. It just hasn't been widely distributed, and you've been trying to distribute it for a long time, and I know you'll succeed.
We're giving it our best. Carl, by the way, graduated magna cum laude from Princeton, JD from University of Chicago, and LLM from Harvard. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Now in our talk back segment, we only have a minute. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary. You know, I'm listening to all this, and I don't know if we're going to have time today. I'd love to spend a little more time on this, but you know, when Lou Hill created the Pacifica Network, the whole idea of these radio stations was to be this quote-unquote voice for the voiceless, to give people a forum. And I'm listening to the show today, and I'm very saddened about the fact that this once great series of radio stations across the country has been essentially bastardized and minimized and just become so decrepit in its management and its staff and its programming that what it's like the most important time to have this kind of radio station available to people. And yet, thank God for PRN, because otherwise I don't think we'd have any station to give us the truth like we're getting on your programming.
I'll bring it up on our next program. I don't have time today. I was listening to Diane Reams while driving in a car from an airport to a filming this morning, and I couldn't believe how inane, how foolish the comments by her and her guests were involving Syria and not understanding any of the true history of Libya. And yet these are the so-called experts. NPR is wonder bread for the brain. And like so many other places, they've lost their mission if they ever really had one. Pacifica still has some very bright, very conscientious, very devoted producers and people in the system. But the system itself, long ago, about 12 years ago, was ghettoized at every level. It was racialized at every level. And as a result, it lost its way. But there was a time when Utrice Lead was running BAI, when it was not only on point, but whatever Lou Hill had in his original concept of a truly progressive station, it exemplified that. And then overnight, in a short period of time, the true progressives and those committed to social change and social justice and holding government accountable and having demonstrations and using a network of informed individuals to challenge power, that was dismantled for self-serving interest of those who believed their radicalized politics and their racial agenda was more important, and they won. It was a perfect coup. There was never a counter coup. It was just a coup. And so that's where we're at today, and that's why they're in the death throes, and my hope is that they survive and learn a lesson and have new programming and new management and new direction. It's up to them to do that. I thank you. We're out of time. Let's go over and say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about the American Civil Liberties Union's National Security Project. We're talking about Israel's plan to deport 60,000 African refugees to some undisclosed countries and President Obama's decision to arm the rebels in Syria.
Huh. Well, they could always deport those refugees to Georgetown in Washington, D.C. They fit right in, right? Sure.
If it would work, that's a workable plan.
Good. In a moment, Utrice Lead.